Learn how to survive your own personal startup grind with Derek Anderson.
Well, I'm excited to be here and thank you all for coming. I'm going to talk a little bit about just being an entrepreneur the last 9 years. And I quit my job at EA in 2009 at a good time. And here we are today and talk a little bit about some of the things I've helped build. So Startup Grind has three really simple values. It's about giving before you take, helping others before you help yourself, and it's about making friends. And those values connect our chapter directors who run our events and our communities around the world. Each one of these people represents a different city, and we've, over the last 7 years, hosted about 6,000 events for about 200,000 people in sort of like this kind of size, about 40, 50 people at a time. So I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs come through. We have 300 active chapters around the world. And we have, this month, we'll have 260 events. And it's run by a full-time team of about three people. We've had about 30 million minutes of our content that's been watched in some form or another. And we film all of our events and our interviews and put them online. My email, this is the only email I've got, derek@startupgrind.com. If I can be useful to you, you don't need to connect with me on LinkedIn. We can just talk here. We're humans. And you can email me. It's much better than LinkedIn because I hate going to LinkedIn. But things I could be good for, or maybe I could be, if I could be helpful to you, if you want an honest opinion but not too mean, I'm pretty good at that, about being real but not being too mean about it. Dealing with venture capitalists, I'm not a prolific fundraiser, thankfully, but I can help kind of work through the psychology of trying to get VCs interested in what you're doing, perhaps, or if you're having team issues, if you want to sit down with your co-founders. I don't know why it's my gift in life to have hard conversations, but this is something that I do quite frequently and have since I was a young child, so I'm happy to help you with that. Things I'm bad at is investment. I do not invest in startups. I invest in my own startup and my family, and that's pretty much all I invest in, and my own education, I suppose, but picking my brain, this is a bad phrase to use. Nobody likes this phrase, picking your brain. Yeah, it's weird, right? It's like, are you a crow and I'm a dead body on the ground? Am I a zombie? Like, what do you mean you want to pick my brain? It's disgusting. This is what success, like, we read all the people that I've interviewed and talked to, like, you would think this, but it's totally this. And you've seen this thing before, but as somebody that is, mine's like crazy. This is like a good person. This is like the founder of Pinterest. This is his, right? But like, mine is like insane. It goes all over the whole page. So, you know, it's okay to get discouraged when it's in the mess of that, but that's a reality for basically everybody. This is me. I moved out here in 2005 to do an internship at Electronic Arts. I had the worst internship they had. I'm convinced I'm the only person that applied, and it was like 2 weeks before, and I got the job. Like, I interviewed, and they gave me the job. They said, drop your classes and come, and I said, all right, well, so I did it. I moved out here. I happened to be in Silicon Valley. I worked pretty hard when I got there. It was the worst internship, so it wasn't that hard to over-deliver on it. But I did get I got an internship later that summer working on it was the best internship. It was working on The Godfather, the video game, which at the time was like the best, biggest production game. It was like Justice League of its era. The biggest budget, but not the best performing video game. It's been a mess since then, mostly just spectacular failures, honestly. And I don't say that with like a lot of pride. Like, I'm embarrassed about that. Like, I had expected that line thing to just be perfect, but I mostly have just screwed up. But a couple of things have worked. So I'm going to just talk about a few of those. This is one that didn't work. In 2008, while I'm at EA, basically one time I was with my boss, who I'm still very good friends with. We were talking and I was sort of complaining because I had done this huge project and I was like the first person in, last person out. And I said to him, I said something like, hey, I'm not an investment banker. He's like, asked me to do this project. I'm like, I'm not an investment banker. I don't get paid like an investment banker. Like, what do you, I can do it, but like, you know. And so then like a few hours went by and I kind of lost my cool a little bit, I guess. And he pulled me into his office. He's like, hey, I went and talked to management today and I really went to bat for you. And I want you to know I got you a $4,000 raise. And I was like, okay, great. Like, am I supposed to be excited about that? Or he's like, yeah, I mean, okay, yeah, thanks, man. And I just sort of realized on that day that if it took me complaining about something, it wasn't the right place for me to be. And I just decided, I started telling my wife every day, like, I got to get out. And so I started to, what I realized is working at a big company, if I worked like 110%, because that's all I work, then I would be in the top 2% of people at EA, okay, in my reviews. But if I worked 70%, I was in the top 10%. And I still got a bonus. So instead of going in and being the first person in, I would just go to Starbucks and start working and work on my own ideas. And I'm not an engineer, and I would get in PowerPoint and try and had this idea of this thing. It's called Kahoo Point. And I took that idea, put it in a PowerPoint. I went out pitching investors. And, you know, when you walk into an investor meeting, who's pitching investor? Okay, a few of you. You're sort of like, I don't know, this is how I feel. I feel like I'm Chuck Norris. Like, I will crush anyone you walk in. And then about like 5 minutes into the meeting, you actually turn out to be that guy, the guy on the right, this guy here, because you're so wholly unprepared for what is the actual things you should say and do in that scenario. Actually, with all the things going on right now, I probably should get a new slide for this. This is probably not the right slide. They were dating at the time, I'm led to believe, but she just caught him by surprise. I talked to this one guy, so I'm going to go back to Chuck Norris. We'll just leave it on this slide for a minute. I did talk to this one guy, and he had started a company, sold it for hundreds of millions of dollars, and I explained what I was working on, and he just said, "Can I be honest with you?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "You're screwed." I said, "Well, why am I screwed? I'm screwed now because I have no confidence, but what about before you told me that?" He said, "Well, you're screwed because you're trying to build a product, you have no engineers, you have no domain expertise, you have no money, you're not the right guy to solve this problem." And I spent about 2 or 3 weeks feeling really bad for myself, and then I realized he was right. And he said, "But there are these guys, and they're working on this company called Instructure. It's this product, and it's like an open source learning management system. It's sort of like what you're doing. Maybe you should just meet with them." I gave him $50,000. You should check them out. Has anybody heard of Instructure? A couple of you have? Okay. They build a product called Canva, which is used in schools. Did you use that in your school? So I met these guys when they had 10 universities, and they came to EA. I got a conference room, and they told me about what they were doing, and I realized it wasn't exactly what I wanted to do, but I realized these guys were so smart, I could never compete against them. And so if I was really passionate about the idea, I should probably just try to work with them. And so I built their first marketing plan, and we tested out working together. And I decided I wasn't passionate about the idea. I wasn't that into it. And so I left. Well, it turns out that Instructure in 2014, they went public. I don't know what they're valued at now. Probably like $700 or $800 million. That same woman's laughing at me again. This is not good. No, I'm just playing. I like it. But I would have been the first employee. So I knew my thing wasn't. So I was right. I needed to not work on my thing, but I may have should have gone with those guys. The next thing I did, so another year passes, and my best friend works for this huge trucking company. All trucks are all the rage right now, right? Tesla launched a new truck. Everybody see this? Okay, this is 2009. I'm thinking about trucks. Of course, I wasn't building self-driving trucks. I was doing advertising on trucks, much lower tech than building a self-driving truck. But he was in trucking, and I was in marketing. Like, let's put those ideas together. We'll come up with something great. This was a terrible idea. This is though I quit my job for this idea. Here's the pitch. There's 6 million trucks in America. They have no advertising on them. It's all this unused inventory. Whoa, big idea, right? No, it's not. It's a terrible idea. And I went out and pitched this idea. I quit my job. And the perfect time to quit my job, there was two things that I had realized. One is it was in the middle of the Great Recession. So I decided that was a great time to do it. And then the other thing was my wife was going to have our first son at the time in June of 2009. So I'm like, what better time than when my wife has a baby? Then I have all this free time. I get away from work and, you know, really focus on it. It's just bad. Dumb. So anyway, so I did. I waited 6 weeks. I took paternity leave. And then I quit. After I realized they were healthy, everything's good, I left. And when I left, my other boss at the time, he said, "Look, if you'll stay, we'll give you a double promotion and we'll raise you about 25% of your salary." And I listened to it. I remember exactly where I was on the call. You know, you have these calls sometimes where you know exactly where you are. And I was driving on the freeway down in San Diego, and I was not excited about it at all. And I realized if I wasn't excited about it, I needed to freaking run as fast as I could and get out of there. And so that's what I did. So I worked on this idea for a few months. My best friend couldn't quit his job. And so I worked on this idea for a few months, and I couldn't sell one freaking truck. Not one. I'm like not the best salesperson in the world, but I'm not the worst, okay? And I'm like sitting there by myself working on this thing, and I'm like, what is the deal with trucks? I freaking hate trucks. Like, why am I like trying to put ads on trucks? Like, I hate this. And my friend of mine calls me, and he had just started this company called Movie Clips. Anybody heard of Movie Clips? Okay, all the cool stuff is my friend's ideas. So he starts this thing called Movie Clips. They're going to put movie trailers on this website, and you'd go there and watch them. Well, That worked a little bit, but actually the next thing they did was they put movie trailers on YouTube. So if you've ever watched a movie trailer on YouTube, it's probably from movie clips. Then that morphed into this other thing where they started monetizing all the studio's content on YouTube because they have these studio relationships. So they started like every time if you've watched like a movie clip on YouTube, you're like, why didn't somebody pull this down? Well, it's because they're making money off of it. So the movie studios, unbeknownst to anybody, just swoops in and makes ad revenue off all this stuff. And this guy's technology powers that whole thing. So I joined up with these guys, and I was their first marketing person. Anyways, they're worth about $500 million now. I left. I was offered 1% of the company, and I did not take it because I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I just kept going. It wasn't what I felt like I needed to do. Followed my gut, which may or may not have turned out to be another good decision or bad decision, but that's the decision I made. The next thing I did, so I'm still like sort of brainstorming, meeting with different people, doing sort of consulting, and I brainstormed with this angel investor. It was the day after the iPad came out, and Steve Jobs presented on stage, and we're sitting there, and he's like, you're from EA. You can make games. I'm like, well, I mean, it's marketing at EA, but yeah, I can totally make games. And he's like, well, why don't you make an iPad game? And like, I'll fund it. I was like, well, what be? He's like, what about like a football game? I'm like, well, football, like maybe, but like we need some marketing power around it. He's like, well, I know Steve Young. I'm like, you do? I'm like, this is great. Yeah, okay, like do it. You know, let's get Steve Young. So he talked to Steve Young. Steve Young came in. This guy funded it. Anybody know who Steve Young is? 49er quarterback? No, people did not know Steve. Okay, this guy 15 years ago was the best athlete in America. He was the NFL Super Bowl MVP. Okay, 49er quarterback. Only left-hander to ever be in the Hall of Fame. All you left-handers out there probably know. So we launched this game. We worked on it for 9 months. I hired a team. We built a game. What's the hardest part about making a game? Anybody know? About to tell you if you don't. What is it? Okay, the hardest thing about making a game is it has to be fun. Okay. Do you know how hard it is to build something that's fun? Do you know how hard it is to build something that works? Then to build something that's also fun that works? It's really hard, but it's also really important. There's no point in launching a game if it's not fun. That seems like the most obvious thing ever. Well, it wasn't obvious to me at the time. And so we did this amazing marketing campaign. Gizmodo called our app, our marketing, the best app ad they'd ever seen, bar none, from Steve Young Football. It was pretty good. I'd take credit for that. I'll also take credit for the game, which was terrible. It was a 5.5. We like got the worst reviews ever. Nobody bought the game. Nobody liked it. It wasn't fun. It was kind of wonky. It sort of looked like we were on drugs. We were not, but we just have a weird sense of humor. But we built this game. We put our heart and soul into it. I spent all this dude's money, and it bombed. How do you think I felt? I felt terrible. I was in like the fetal position for like 3 weeks. Like, what am I doing? What a waste of time. I've now just wasted this person's money. I've never done that in my whole life. And here I am. What a freaking failure. I could have taken that double promotion if I just kept my stupid job at EA and kept my mouth shut and worked 70% of my energy capacity. But no. After about 3 weeks, I read this book from a guy named Steve Blank. Anybody heard of Steve Blank? Okay. Solid. Get this book right now on your phone. You can pull out your phone and act like you're listening to what I'm telling you to do if you want to do that and just check your email or whatever. 4 Steps to the Epiphany. This book changed my life. In the first chapter, it talks about that you should never market a product until you know that you have a good product. It's really simple. It's like math. Good product, marketing, positive effect. Bad product, marketing, negative effect. Pointless. So I later talked to Steve about this and told him he's an advisor for Startup Grind now. And I said, if only I'd seen your book before. And what his comment was, if you had seen my book before, you would have never even paid attention to it for 1 second. But because I had failed so abysmally, I had to pay attention to it. And I was convinced I would not make the same mistake again. You've seen a continuous pattern that I've had, and you can be sure I did not actually fall through on that. But one thing we did start doing while we were doing Steve Young Football, so we started hosting these events in my office with my friends, because when you're in a small company, no one educates you. You have to educate yourself. And when you're in a big company, they spend all this money to like bring in cool people to talk to you and whatever. Well, when you're a small company, it's all on your own. So we didn't have a good forum for that. And I would go to events and people would be, I'd be like, hey, how are you? What's your name? And they'd be like, oh, who are you? And I'm like, well, I just left EA and now I'm doing this. And I'd be like, well, what have you started? And I'm like, well, I haven't started anything yet. I just got here. And like, well, I don't want to talk to you. It's like, well, that's lame. Like, I have something to give. Everybody has something they can give if you'll just listen, right? So that sort of was the sort of basis, foundation of Startup Grind. So we started hosting events. About 6 months later, we're hosting these events and literally 4 people showed up in an event. And I was like, what a freaking waste of time. Honestly, this is in the fall of 2010. I am like, just my games just collapsed, just lost all this dude's money. Like, this stupid meetup thing I'm doing called Startup Grind, it's not like nobody even cares about that. I'm not doing it that much, but it was just seemed like a distraction. And you hear these stories sometimes, and I don't know, sometimes they're true, sometimes they're not. But this one is actually true. I said to myself, I'm going to do two more events. I'm going to really try to market it. And if people show up, great. If they don't, we'll just shut it down. Doesn't matter. And so the next event, about 8 weeks later, this is my office, and 40 people showed up. And actually, I would give meetup.com a huge amount of credit. They sold their company today to WeWork. I give meetup.com a huge amount of credit to this actually happening because we got on a meetup before this event, and a lot of these people came from that. And then a couple months later, we had 80 people. And this is not my office. This is downstairs in my office complex. You see that sign in the corner right here? This sign? Well, I had like found the key to the offices where no one was staying. And like we thought there was going to be like some sort of fire situation upstairs because there's only one exit. And I was like sure I was going to get on CNN finally, but it was going to be for like the most awful reason ever because 80 entrepreneurs died in a horrible fire in Mountain View, California, thanks to Steve Young Football and Startup Grind and a guy named Derek Anderson. So anyways, I got into this building. It was an empty room. I got in, turned the lights on. We had our event, got everybody out, got all the chairs up, made sure there wasn't any food on the floor and got the heck out of there. We did that for like a year. And it was perfect. It's a great venue. But you got to do what you got to do, you know? This is February 2011. 130 people came. This guy, Jason Calacanis, you guys recognize this fella from launch? Interesting guy. So he says to me, hey, I'll speak. I didn't know him. I just emailed him. He says, look, I'll speak, but I don't want to do a talk. You got to interview me. I'm like, all right, cool. He's like, and I'm just going to show up and then I'm going to walk out because I'm very busy. That's exactly how we like to do it, Jason. Let's do it like that. So he showed up, he walked in, and I interviewed him, and then he left. And people came up to me like, that was really cool. That was really good. That was like, didn't feel like a sales pitch. Like I got a lot out of it. It was a good interview. Like it's good vibe. Like I was like, really? Oh, okay, cool. So we got all this positive feedback. I was like, let's just do that again. So then the next month, I had Naval Ravikant, the founder of AngelList. He drove down. We had 170 people. And then a couple months after that, we've now found a better venue, AOL Hostess in Palo Alto. And we started doing these interviews. And they just worked really well. You might say like, I've been to so many interviews. It felt unique at the time in space that we were doing it in. And we had really the best speakers that you could possibly get at a meetup. There were, I'm sure, other events where better speakers were speaking. That fall in 2011, I'm basically like, I've now put all my money into another startup idea, which I won't bore you with, but it's basically spent all my money now. And I was running out of money. And this guy walked into one of our events one time. We always had pizza. And because we're paying for it, we had the worst pizza you could possibly buy, which is like Domino's, right? But it's the cheapest. And so he walked over to the Domino's pizza and he stacked the pizza like 8 pieces high. And because we're paying for it, we had the worst pizza you could possibly buy, which is like Domino's, right? But it's the cheapest. And so he walked over to the Domino's pizza and he stacked the pizza like 8 pieces high and he walked the freak out. And I was like, who the heck are you, dude? Like, what are you doing? And this is before the event even started. And I was just like sitting there and I had this epiphany. I was like, I haven't created a startup community. It's like a startup homeless shelter. Because why else would you ever come to this event to get Domino's terrible, awful cardboard pizza? Well, my kids love it. And so I just said, this is what looks like in my mind. This is not him. But I owe a lot to this guy. And if someday in the next life, hopefully, I can figure out who this guy was and like go back and watch the video and find him and thank him because it actually had a huge impact. Because then I said, I'm going to start charging through these events because that guy will never come back if I charge because no one's going to pay $10 for Domino's pizza. You just go to Domino's and buy your own $5 pizza. So I'll start charging. He won't come and maybe no one will come and I don't care because that's not what this is about. If they are just coming for the food, like screw this, we'll shut it down. But the thing was the next event, 60% of the people came back and it was all the highest quality people. And people start saying, I've been wanting to like give you money. Like, thank you for charging. And I was like, you could have put some money in the tip jar, but that's okay. Whatever. All's well that ends well. And at the same time, I had this guy who came up at the event and he's like, just like this, he walks up and he's like, I love the brand. I love the values. I love just like what this is. We got to do this in LA. And I'm like, it's a meetup, bro. like, just start a meetup in LA. It's not that hard. He's like, no, we need this. And I was like, you don't know what you're talking about. Why would you ever need this? And he came to my office. He's a surfer guy. He was like the worst person possible to do this. Like, I was clear that like he was not the guy to do this with us, but he was the only guy that had ever suggested it. And so I was like, well, what do we have to lose? Like, I'll probably get sued, but I don't have anything, so might as well do it anyways. It'll be fun. And so we did it. And the first event, these were my Movie Clips buddies who are down there, Rich and Zach. And they did the first event, and it went really well. People came up and were like, that was awesome. I was like, really? Like, what about my – have you tried Steve Young Football? It's pretty sick. So anyways, from there, we start doing a couple other places. And I was having lunch or breakfast with one of my mentors, and he said to me, I was going through my startup at the time, and he's like, I don't know about that thing you're working 29 days of the month on. Like, I don't get it. But this startup grind thing, like, it has something. Like, it's got this unnatural inertia to it. And I was sitting there, and I was like, it finally clicked. I was like, yeah, actually, you're right. It does. It, like, people love startup grind, and we don't even try. And people hate this other thing we're doing, and we're, like, trying like crazy. And so, because I'm not that smart, I had to sit there for probably like 10 minutes, and I was like, man, if I just spend more time on the thing people like, maybe more good things will happen, and less thing on the thing people hate, maybe less bad things will happen. Yeah, I think that makes sense. Okay, so that's exactly what I did. Went from one day to like 10 days, and it all seems obvious now, but it really didn't at the time. And so about 6 months later, we were totally running out of money. Again, you hear these myths, but this is totally true. I started looking at part-time jobs. Like, I told my co-founder, like, I'll find you a job and we'll get back together in 6 months to figure this out. And we were going to shut down our product. We found somebody to buy it who we'd done some consulting work for in the past. Found somebody to buy the technology on a whim, and that kept the lights on for 6 months. It's the greatest transaction I've ever done. And I've done now since lots of transactions that were 10x as big as that. And that's still the best, most awesome transaction I've ever done. I felt like I'd made $100 million. But we kept the lights on for six more months and felt like that was all we needed. We had stared at death in the face and we stared him down, and he turned around and walked away. And he said, I'll come back in 6 months, see where you're at. But ever since then, like, going through all these failures, all these problems. And I think every entrepreneur that survives long enough has this moment. And I'm not saying I'm a great entrepreneur, but I'm just saying all these people you read about, they have this opportunity where it should all just be done. And somehow, some way, it's not. And for whatever reason. So we moved into my garage, this Startup Grind garage. And we just start signing up people for chapters. And at first, we begged and pleaded people to do it. So the first people, we just begged anybody. I met these guys from Australia. They came up and like, oh, we won't shake your hand, you know, bro. And I was like, wait, you're from Australia? Like, yeah, like, do Startup Grind. They're like, no, we don't want to do Startup Grind. We just wanted to say hi. I'm like, no, I know, but you should do it. And they're like, well, no, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, let's get lunch. Like, well, we're leaving tomorrow. I'm like, no, well, let's get breakfast. So I was like, I'll buy. 7 a.m., we went to breakfast with these two guys, and I just talked them into running Startup Grind Sydney. And they did. And they did an amazing job. And they ran it for a long time, and then one of them moved to New Haven. One of them ended up getting a job at Uber Australia from it. He was like one of the first employees at Uber in Australia, made a ton of money from it. And then the other guy went to New Haven, and then he started grinding New Haven, and he started interviewing people, the Yale chapter. He wasn't in Yale, but he started interviewing people. He interviewed the dean of the business school, became friends with him, and got himself into Yale. It's like, what? I know, I don't understand it either. It's dumb. So this happened again and again and again, and we had all sorts of good things come from it. In 2011, we had two chapters. In 2013, we had grown to 75, or 2012, I was just talking about 30. And today, we have more than 300 chapters that are active. We've hosted events in more than 500 cities. And these are the events. We'll do about 1,600 events this year. But the things I'm most proud of are the things I could have never guessed would happen. This is one of those examples. These are all directors of different chapters. This director is the director of Tel Aviv, Silicon Valley, Ramallah, Palestine, and Tehran, Iran. There's no other organization in the world that has something like this. When people in the UN from these countries stand up, everybody from the other countries walks out. That's the UN. It's like the world's most peaceful organization, okay? Entrepreneurship is the great equalizer. At the most basic level, people want to feed their kids. Doesn't matter in whatever country they're in. We want to take care of our families. And we can all agree on that. And entrepreneurship creates a way that we can look beyond our political issues, our geopolitical issues, religious issues, and just get down to the core of what we are, all are as people. And that's really taking care of our families. We do a promotion every May. We've done this for the last 4 years, where we host over 100 women on 100 stages in 100 cities. And just think about that for a minute. And I don't do any of it, so don't worry. Don't feel bad for me. It's the team. They have to do all the work. But we're very proud of the diversity of our organization and the focus that the very small additional focus that we've hopefully put on female entrepreneurship. I was scanning Instagram a few years ago, and I see this picture from Babel. Does anybody know where Babel is? Okay, it's in Iran. And I'm like, wow, look at this picture. I mean, there's way too many dudes in that picture. But other than that, like, this is pretty amazing. And I'm like talking to my team, like, who's running Babel? Like, when did this happen? And the guy that's sitting next to me who onboards all the chapters, he's like, you know, we don't have a chapter in Babel. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, I've never heard of that city, let alone the person running it. And anyways, we got a hold of him pretty quickly and we worked it out. But these things happen. So in that vein, in 2015, as we're scaling, we started to have all of these problems with our technology. We had built on top of different things like WordPress and Eventbrite and Meetup and other things. And the whole thing was crumbling. We couldn't scale or grow anymore. And I looked at all the tools that were available and we couldn't find anything that would be satisfactory to what we needed. And anything that was close, let's call it 60% of the way there, was going to cost me about $150,000 a year in SaaS fees, software as a service fees. And so my co-founder is a full stack engineer. So I just decided, well, why don't we take what that investment is going to be over the next 3 years, which was about $500,000. And why don't we just invest in our own product and build our own team and build exactly what we need. And then we can scale the team down when we have it. And then at least we have exactly what we want. And so we spent all of 2015 building this product. And then in 2016, we onboarded Startup Grind, which is arguably one of the largest communities in the world to use this brand new product. It was pretty painful. But after about 6 more months, it was working pretty well and we started to grow again. And then all these other people that ran communities started to come to me and say, hey, what do you guys use for your technology? And I was like, we just built this thing because we didn't find anything good. And they're like, well, can we use it? And I was like, I don't know. I don't do free anymore because that really screwed me over the last few years. So like, I don't do free. They're like, well, how much does it cost? I'm like, I don't know. How about 20 grand a year? They're like, oh yeah, for sure. I pay for that. I was like, dang it. Like, I mean, 30, 20 a month, you know? No, it's okay. They were the first one. They deserved it. But today, now about just over a year later, our community technology powers the communities for people that you may have heard of, like Atlassian and Docker and Duolingo and Fiverr and CMX and Branch. And this is one of those things that, again, was not what we planned to do. But after 5 years of building community, it turns out we are experts in building communities. And so our product is called Bevy. And basically what it does is it allows Duolingo in this example. It allows somebody like Duolingo who has, anybody heard of Duolingo? Language learning app, 150 million users. They launched an event program this summer. They'd hosted one event in one city in June. And last month they hosted about 100 events in 100 cities with not having to hire anybody, all volunteers, all from their community. So it's essentially like Startup Grind, but for Duolingo. And so this is now a huge thing that we've kind of stumbled onto and raised some money on it this summer. And we have been signing up customers and selling software. And strictly out of another, you think of Startup Grind was a problem, an actual problem that I had and my co-founder. And then Bevy is now community software built from a problem that we had as community people. And so hopefully in another year or two, every major, probably will take us longer than 2 years, but every major community that you touch in technology, we think that we can get them to use our product pretty quickly. And it's when I sell it, it is much more about people are enamored with the software's done for Startup Grind. And so I'm not actually selling it. I'm just telling our story. And that's my time to shut up. But I share this experience not to like say anything great about myself or my team, but I say it so you can see and understand that one of the greatest lessons that I have learned as an entrepreneur is that I don't invent problems to solve anymore. I have wasted way too much of my own money on that. And I would much rather stay in my crappy job or wait to get as good a scenario as I possibly can to solve a real problem, get the right people on board with me, than to just invent something like truck advertising to quit your job. Okay, real quick, 2 minutes. Let's get through these. There's a book by Clay Christensen called How You Measure Your Life. You should all read this. It's not a very long book. Clay Christensen is maybe the most important business thinker of our generation. I didn't say that. Lots of other smart people said that. He basically says there's three things when you start out in your career you should figure out you're not going to do. Let's go to jail, make your wife hate you, and make your kids hate you. That may sound stupid and obvious, but actually, especially as entrepreneurs, those things can be, and over the last couple months, much harder to do than they sound. You know, I think a lot about my kids. Those are not, oh, sorry, it's my, there's the kids. My kids who, like, of course, the whole reason I'm doing a startup is for my family, to feed my kids, right? And to create a better life for them than I had. But if I get through to the end and they hate me, what's the freaking point? I made some money. I mean, yeah, that would be good. But like, what am I gonna do? Go get hair or something? Like, there's only so much I can buy. You know, I mean, 2 months ago, we just had our fourth child, our second little girl. This is basically what being a parent is like. This is the nice Instagram photo, but the rest of these is really like, people talk about balance or whatever. Like, I'm not going to get into that, but it just to say, like, every time my startup went wrong, I still invested time and energy into something that I really cared about. And I knew I was going to care about in 30 years. And every time something failed, I could still go home and knew that, like, I wasn't starting from scratch because I had, like, invested in this people. And that may be your parents. That may be your brothers and sisters. That may be a friend. That may be, it doesn't have to be this. But it's just to say, like, don't forget about that stuff. Like, don't just put it aside. And don't ruin it if you've got it or if you started to get it. Opportunity is a muscle. Like, they don't just hit you. You got to go get it and you got to work at it. Like, opportunity knocks. Are you the kind of person that opens the door or not? The reason that I do stuff like this, and Colin, you know, was gracious enough to invite me, but it's because I don't know where the next cool opportunity is going to come from. It's not that I want to start another company. It's just, I just don't know. And why give out my email? Because I want to be open. Doesn't mean I say yes to a lot. I don't, but I listen. Vinod Khosla gives his email out at every event he goes to. And I know he reads every email because he answered one of my cold emails and spoke at one of my events many years ago. And it's because the smartest, best people in the world, they keep the door open. And everyone in my experience gets a chance at the opportunity merry-go-round. If you feel like you have not gotten a chance, then you haven't been in the game long enough. Stick with it. Find a way to survive. Grind it out. Find a way to survive. Everyone gets a chance. Okay, we all miss Bitcoin. It's not the end of the world. Okay? There's another freaking stupid Bitcoin thing coming. Just wait. It was Groupon before. It was accelerators before that. Like, something, another wave is coming. You just got to stick it out. Don't make short-term decisions. Also, don't eat at McDonald's. My kids love McDonald's. It like makes me sick. I used to grub McDonald's every day in college, but play the long game. Like, we might meet tonight, but we might meet in 5 years from now. So what is our relationship going to be? It starts tonight, and then where does it go? And when you're going to go up to an investor and you run up to them like, I need funding. No, it's not like that. Think about, how do I build a relationship with this person the next 5 years? What can I do? How can I add value? Right? Help first. Give first. It will come back. It always comes back. These are guys I went to college with. The guy in the bottom started this thing called Beloved Shirts. He was on Shark Tank. Amazing businessman. We were friends. When it didn't matter, we were friends. Zach James, I talked about. Movie Clips guy. Incredibly successful. Has helped me so much. And the other guy, Ryan Smith, started a company called Qualtrics. Anybody heard of Qualtrics? $2.5 billion software as a service survey company. And I used to play Halo with this guy in college. And we were just friends. And we've helped each other a little bit over the years. And he's one of my very good friends. But I didn't know him when he needed anything from me. Now, he doesn't need anything from me now. He didn't need anything from me then. But we're friends for no reason, but we're friends. And when you sit next to somebody, you say, if you genuinely say, how can I help this person? You don't know. They may be turn out the next person on the cover of Inc. or they might not. It doesn't matter. Just help them. It's the right thing to do. That's double alarm. I'm totally done. I'm just not even going to say that. This is the last thing I'll end on this. The good old days are now. And that, depending on what stage you're at, you may scoff at that. But I think that when I've talked to successful people, you know, the stories that they talk about the days that we're in. They talk about the days that really suck. And they talk about the times where they were eating out of a can. I heard Larry Ellison speak a month ago, and I asked him two questions that I'll finish on. There was a small group of people. And I said, the first thing I said is like, I was amazed that the stories he was telling were about the earliest days of Oracle, about when his power would get shut off and he was an engineer and he would go down the street and like find a way to like get the power back on the light pole. And they finally called him and said like, dude, you are costing us so much money by coming out and bringing people back to shut your power off. Just how much can you pay on your power bill? And we will just like figure it out. And he's like, well, I got like 10 bucks. Like, okay, give us 10 bucks this month. Just like, don't mess with the power it's causing problems. But like, he was so proud of that story. It's freaking Larry Ellison. Guy owns a freaking island. And he's telling a story about Jimmy rigging the power, you know? And I asked him, what's the thing of all the things you've done when you lay down at night and nobody's listening and nobody's watching and it's just you? Like, what are you most proud of? And the story he told the story that when he was going to, I believe it was the University of Illinois, and he was an engineer, and his family wanted to be a doctor, and he dropped out, and he came out to Silicon Valley and joined as an engineer. And he said that like he ended up subsequently leaving and starting Oracle, which was small, of course, in the beginning, nothing, and then it became something. But he said that it took about another 10 years, but that at some point, his parents and his siblings eventually were proud of him for having become an entrepreneur and not being a doctor, that they finally recognized that that was a good decision. And I just think about that for a second. The guy is like so unbelievably wealthy and he does so many outlandish, ridiculous things. I think his quote from Steve Jobs was, Steve, you don't spend enough money. If you need stuff to spend money on, you come tell me and I'll tell you what you can spend money on. This guy has more money than almost any other human being that's ever lived on the face of the earth. And the thing that matters most to him when he is alone and laying in bed and it's quiet is the fact that he made his parents proud. Think about that for a minute and think about your own situation and just don't lose sight of the things that are really important. And just remember that these are the days you'll always be telling stories about. Thank you so much.